Right, so tonight most of what I'm going to say is coming from this Haggadah over here. This is called Tam Vadas. It's from Moshe Sternbuch's Haggadah, the Abbezin of the Erech Haredes. It's put out many years ago, but it's this year I picked it up finally to look. We had it in the house, my wife had it, but this year I picked it up to look at it, and I enjoyed what he had to say. So most of what I'm sharing is from this Haggadah. If not, then I'll let you know. But most of it's from this Haggadah. So let's go to Avadim Hayinu. So the Manash Tana has asked, which the question is asked, you know, about the Seder. And the response that we give is the simple story of Adam and Eve, Mitzrayim, we're slaves to Paro, Hashem took us out, Be'at Chazaka, etc. So he quotes over here a very interesting story. He says that one time the Chofetz Chaim was in the Ukraine. And it was in the Ukraine. At that time, things were very bad in the Ukraine for Jews. People were being killed and slaughtered all over the place. Al Kiddush Hashem. And the Chofetz Chaim was at the doctor's office. And the doctor told the Chofetz Chaim, he said, I don't understand. You believe in God. You're a big tzaddik. I have questions. Look around us. You're telling me God is with us? I mean, people are being slaughtered left and right. We're in a terrible time right now. Where is God exactly? All I see out there is cruelty. So that was the question that this doctor posed to the Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim, at first, he remained silent. So the doctor said, oh, look at that. I see that you're also starting to doubt God. You didn't have an answer for me. That's the Chofetz Chaim. So the Chofetz Chaim responded. The Chofetz Chaim said that, I don't believe you're a doctor. I doubt you that you're a doctor. So the doctor said, what do you mean? Of course I'm a doctor. He said, look, here's my degree. I'll show it to you. It's on the wall over here. I'll tell you which school I went to. I was certified as a doctor. And that's what he said. So the Chofetz Chaim responded, yeah, but that was many, many years ago. What happened since then? And the doctor said, well, once you're certified as a doctor, so you're made a doctor, and your credentials are based on what you did a long time ago. So Chofetz Chaim said, now, of course, Baruch Hu has credentials. Hashem has his credentials. What are his credentials? He sees Mitzrayim. All the nisim which occurred in Mitzrayim, by the Makkos, all of the miracles which we saw, those giluyim, those revelations of Hashem, that was Hashem's credentials. Once you have those credentials, and you're certified as you are the Borei Olam, and you've shown who you are, what you can do, that doesn't expire. So sometimes you may not perceive Hashem, and sometimes you do, but Hashem's degree has been established from the start based on his Mitzrayim. And from that point in history and onwards, we know who Hashem is, and he's always involved and always cares what's happening in the world. Even when things look bleak and we don't know where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is and what he's doing, the story of Pesach tells us Hashem is always there for us no matter what. So that was the story of the Chofetz Chaim. So the Sternbuch says that at this point in the Seder, he always tells this story. Because Avadim Hayinu was really the beginning point. When we think about our history, we say that we were Avadim, because Baruch Hu took us out, Be'at Chazaka, with great nisim. And this establishes for us what Hashem is about for all of history. This is the very famous Ramban in Parshas Bo that talks about Yisus Mitzrayim being the source of all of our understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the Yisodi Emunah, the foundations of Yiddishkeit are all found in Yisus Mitzrayim, all based on these miracles and on this story. So when you first start the story, you have to reflect upon the power of the story, which is that these are the credentials Hashem has established for the world. And again, Hashem doesn't need our approval, but we have to have somebody to perceive Hashem. We wouldn't know about Hashem otherwise. And through Yitzhak Mitzrayim, we've learned about Hashem, and that established Hashem's credentials for history. So that's Avadim Hayinu. Let me just skip a little bit over here. We have the famous story in the Haggadah about the Seder in Bnei Brak. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, and it says they're speaking about Mitzrayim until their Talmidim came in and said that the time for Kriyas Shema Shacharis has arrived. So the story itself seems to be in the Haggadah, I believe, simply to show this concept of Kol Marbel Sakir, that the longer you speak about it, the better. They spoke about it so long, they spoke about it all night long. That's the simple meaning of the story. It's a model for us to show us how enthusiastic we should be about the Seder. We should keep on going, and it says in Halacha, until you drop, basically, until you can no longer go. If you're too tired, you fall asleep, that's where you should go. But there's a deeper point over here, brought out in different ways, by different svarim. It says that they stopped when their Talmidim said that Zman Kriya Shema has arrived. It's time for Kriya Shema. So why is that the way they ended the Seder? I mean, I guess they had to say Kriya Shema, but why is the Haggadah stressed that point? So symbolically, there's a big point over here. Again, I've seen it in a few different ways brought out, but I'll tell you how the Rav Sternbuch says it. The way the Rav Sternbuch describes it is that there's a tremendous emphasis here on the goal of the Seder. When the Seder ends, what should be our feeling? So the feeling should be similar to the feeling of Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema, we know, is when we are supposed to dedicate ourselves to Kosh Baruch Hu 100%. B'chol nafshecha, you're willing to give up your life, L'kiddush Hashem. B'chol mevdecha, everything you have, all your possessions, all the energy and talent, everything you got is going to go to Kosh Baruch Hu, everything. So when it says the Seder ended with Kriya Shema, what it means is that the feeling one has when the Seder is over should be in some way equivalent to the mysterious nefesh required for Kriya Shema. That same self-sacrifice, that same commitment Kriya Shema brings us to, the Seder should leave us at that point. So that's what it means that the Seder ended with Kriya Shema, means this should be our goal in the Seder. When we finish the Seder, we should feel so committed and so indebted to Hashem, we're willing to give it all for Kosh Baruch Hu. And that's what he gives my Kriya Shema chakras.
Is that different in the middle? The middle is
I think you're right, because the hallow, Hakar Satov and Mitzvah Nefesh are two different things. You know, hallow is Hakar Satov. You know, the Seder should bring you also to the feelings of gratitude. That should also be in the Seder. But when it's all said and done,
I was like, oh, I now feel like I need to give a kind.
I need to praise Hashem. Yeah, hallel, right, exactly. But when it's all said and done, you know, hallel of the Hashem is being hallel also. You know, Rav de Hashem. And leave the feeling of the Seder. I used to be Eved Taparo, and now I'm Hashem Zev. Hashem Zev means that it all goes to Kosh Baruch Hu. So even hallel stresses that point too. You know, hallel of the Hashem. But you're right. I mean, there are many different aspects of the Seder, but I think that this is telling us that when it's all said and done, when I fall asleep Pesach night, I'm fussing with that attitude, I'm totally committed to Kosh Baruch Hu 100%. The Haggadah continues on, and it goes to, we have this paragraph, seems to be a very random paragraph. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, Baruch HaShalom Yisrael Baruch Hu. So then that introduces the four sons, the Arbabanim. So the question is, this paragraph, I mean, what's it doing here? It seems to be a very random insertion into Haggadah. Like, there's many explanations given as to why this is here. But, so one way to understand it is the following. When Hashem called Hamakom, so that's most familiar to us. When everyone knows the phrase Hamakom, that's interesting. I wasn't thinking that. That's what I was thinking. Right? Unfortunately, we say that phrase most often when it comes to Nichum Avelim. We're comforting somebody in Avelus, we say Hamakom Yinachem Eschem. The Gemara says if somebody incurs a monetary loss, you say Hamakom Yimali Ches. That the makom should fill your lacking, your needs. So makom is usually associated with some form of lacking or loss or difficulty. That's where you find the term hamakom. So Rav Sternbuch explains, so why is it that way? Why is it that hamakom is the term that we kind of, the Shem Hashem invoked in a situation of loss or avelus? So he says the word hamakom means that Kadosh Baruch Hu is found everywhere. Hamakom means the place. I think the art scroll translation is the omnipresence. You know, Hashem is everywhere. That's what Hamakom is. So when Lo Aleinu we go through loss or suffering, so that could bring into our minds that there's a void of Hashem over here. Something tragic has happened, which means Hashem has left me. Hashem is not around. Hashem is not involved. And the word Hamakom tells you, no, Hashem is everywhere. He is all. And when something Lo Aleinu goes wrong, it's not due to a lack of Hashem. Hashem is there, and Hashem is guiding that as well. So the term Hamakom is a term we want to invoke when we discuss tragedy, because it shows that a tragedy is not a void of Hashem. Hashem is never. There's never a void of Hashem. Hashem is always there. Hashem is like Malka Moishi says, you know, Hashem is there. Hashem is there. He's everywhere, right? That's where Hashem is. We recognize that there is always hashkacha, even in the worst of times. So you're discussing the stories of Mitzrayim, and we have to mention Hashem as the makom, because we have to recognize even during the avdus and the suffering, the tragedy, Hashem is still there. That's one idea about hamakom. But then it continues. It's a little bit of birchas Torah.
Eating because you're hungry.
Right now we're trying to say thank you Hashem for giving the Torah to Klal Yisrael Baruch Hu.
Possibly,
and we're about to discuss the four sons. So where does this come in? So there's a concept over here, and again, the Haggadah is always bringing out to us so many foundations of Amunah and of Yiddishkeit. Everything's in the Haggadah. Haggadah is an incredible work. So here there's a very important point about Torah itself. And the message here is the following, that you have in front of you now four very different sons. Chacham, Rasha, Tamir, Delishol. They're all there. And we're supposed to find a message in the Torah for every single son.
Those are the three.
And a lot of books don't have messages for all people. You pick up a book in the library or in the store, it'll speak to someone and won't speak to others. Not every book is going to be a universal message to hit every single person. The Torah has in it the message to give to every type of human being. It's all there. The Torah tells us all about all four sons. They're all different psukim in the Torah. The response is given in the Torah. The response in the Haggadah actually doesn't always give exactly what the Torah says. That itself is a discussion of why that is. But the Torah is the one sefer which you will find a message in the Torah to every single Jew, no matter who they are, where they're coming from, their emotional situation, intellectual situation, their background, everything, there'll be a message for you in the Torah. Chazal say that at Har Sinai,
except for the first night,
when Kosh Baruch Hu spoke, you had your 600,000 Jews there, but every Jew heard their own individual message. Meaning the Torah says that the Dibros are in second person. I am Hashem, your God, in singular. It's not Hashem Elokeichem, I'm plural, because Hashem spoke to every individual, and every Jew heard their message as they needed to hear it. Because every person needs a different message. We can't all be given the same, cookie cutter message. I think that's going to speak to us. Every single Jew is different. We're all unique. We all need a different message. So before we're about to discuss how you have very different children at the Seder, and each one needs their own message, we say the praise of the Torah that actually contains in it every message needed to get every single kid. This is one of the challenges people have in the world of chinuch, which is that you go into a classroom and you have 22 kids and each one needs their own separate rebbe, and you're only one person. So it's the idea of the differentiation in the world of education, be able to speak to every kid in the way they need to hear it, that's one of the biggest challenges any teacher or rebbe has to have. But that's, we all need that for children also, because everyone needs their own message. So that's the idea of praising the Torah before you get to the Arba Banim. We're praising the Torah for it contains within it the ability to speak to every single person. So the list of the four sons, you have the Chacham, you have the Rasha, the Tam, and the Elishol. So usually if I asked you, what's the opposite of the Chacham, what would you say?
Since sitting in the sukkah,
the opposite of the chacham,
Tzorech Gufo, is not something you're doing.
Tom, it's interesting.
Mitzvah.
You have somebody who's very smart, somebody who, I guess we call him stupid. I mean, I don't know how to phrase it nicely, but somebody who's not so wise. Well, the Tom is, it's not that he's not wise, the Tom. The Maral says the Tom is somebody who's just not proactively pursuing knowledge. It's not that he's not, he could be a very smart guy. But he's not a bookworm, or he's not so curious to know things. But he could be a very intelligent person. If chacham means that you're very intelligent, you would think the opposite should be like a tippish, so somebody who is unintelligent. No, you'll have like the high IQ, the low IQ, or something. But the Haggadah actually has is the opposite of the chacham. It seems to be the Rasha. The Rasha and the chacham seem to go together. And the Tam and the Elishol are kind of their own separate discussion, but Chacham and Rasha are here. There's no Tippish here, it's a Chacham and Rasha.
Yeah.
So what's the idea over here? So the idea of the Rasha is he's not a stupid kid. The Rasha is very smart. The Rasha is somebody who just chooses not to believe in Hashem for his own, not because of a lack of intelligence, because he has his own agenda. He doesn't want to be bound by mitzvos or by Kodesh Baruch Hu. He wants to go do his own thing. So we're not comparing intelligence here. We're comparing somebody who's seeking out truth to do what's right. That's the Chacham. And the Rasha, despite the fact he's very intelligent, he's not seeking out truth. What the Rasha is doing, he's just trying to counteract the truth so he can do what he wants. The Maral describes that a Rasha is not, again, he says it's not somebody who is stupid. He's somebody who wants to know the knowledge in order to fight against the Torah. The Chacham wants to find the truth. The Rasha has an agenda, and he wants to take the knowledge he learns in order to flip it around and fight back against that which is true. That's the Rasha. It's a challenge that many people have, because always, none of us want to be bound or restrained. We want to do what we want to do.
I can't actually answer.
And one of the biggest challenges of being a Jew is we have to know the Torah does. We have constraints. The Torah guides our life and gives us rules. We have to follow them. But everybody wants to be able to follow their own desires and do what they choose to do, their own passions and their own lusts and their own desires. Everyone wants to do that. So it's always the challenge of, am I going to now have to fight against the Torah in order so I can do my desires? Or am I going to accept the truth and control myself? That's Rav Chanan Wasser Zuckerman, Shemikom Damo. You know, he has a very famous piece in Kumas Memarim. It's his Sefer, his Musar Sefer. And he mentions, he says, why is it that the wisest people of history were not believers in Torah and Hashem? Now, if we think it's so obvious that a 13-year-old kid, when he's bar mitzvah, has to accept on himself all the mitzvahs, follow every halacha, and believe in Hashem 100%, because it's such an obvious and simple thing to us. Why is it that, you know, Aristotle and Einstein, all these different people, you look at as the intellectuals of history, they weren't religious Jews. It's obvious. You should accept the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why not? So Rav Elchanan says it's very simple. We know the Torah tells us, Ashochad Ya'aver Eini Chachamim. It says in the Torah that bribery blinds the eyes of a person. When you have a personal gain, then you miss the truth sometimes. When you're biased, you miss the truth sometimes. And when people want to be able to dictate their own lives and do as they please. So God stands in the way of that. Because God says, no, you have to follow certain rules, you have to be moral and ethical, and you have to have self-control. That's what God, knowing, believing in God limits you. And people don't want to be limited. So that's considered like you're biased, you're bribed, because you have your own agenda. And therefore, because of that, you will not, you will do whatever you can to fight against the concept of God and Torah so that you can follow your own agenda. So it's not due to a lack of intelligence. It's not due to a lack of the Torah being something which is very clear to understand. Rather, it's when you have your own agenda, people can deny all sorts of things in their own agenda. The people can stare truth in the face and totally deny it because they have their own ideas in mind. That's something that everyone does on their own level constantly, and it's one of the challenges in the world which is out there. Paro himself, he went through 10 makos. You think after the first makkah, it would be pretty obvious that there's a God out there. And Paro had to, he kept denying it because, he had his own agenda. And that was Shulcha Yavarin Chachamim. Shulcha, bribery is able to corrupt your vision and corrupt the way you think. That's what bribery does to a person. The halacha says, a judge takes a bribe, even if he's not attempting to rule wrong, subconsciously, he's probably going to rule wrong. Because he's, like it or not, once you have a bribe, you are biased. It's a fact. It's not just a decision to make by the judge. It's a fact. And therefore, it's a fact that our taivas, our desires, our passions, our own agenda we have in life does corrupt our proper judgment sometimes. So that's the Russia. The Russia is somebody whose judgment is corrupted based on the fact he has his own agenda, and therefore that's why he won't accept the Torah. I saw a fascinating comment, a little more, I guess, a little, I don't know, Kabbalistic or esoteric, but Rav Moshe Wolfson Shlita, the Sefer Mursi Techa. So he writes that by the Makkah of Dam, the very first Makkah. So the Torah says, the Paro should know that I am Hashem. Now after Dam, Paro denied Hashem, right? He still denied Hashem. So did the Makkah accomplish what's supposed to accomplish? So what's the answer? And he actually describes, he goes through a long point that the magicians of Paro, magic doesn't work in water, apparently. The Gemara talks about how if you take something that has some sort of curse of kishuv upon it, and you put it into water, it reverses it. Water is like a mikvah. Water is tahara. And, evil, dark forces of kishuv and witchcraft and Paro's magicians, they can't work their magic in a mikvah of tahara. This is a place of kedusha and tahara, and magic can't work over there. So the Makkah of Dam was done in the water. And the magicians, they can only do their magic on water inside a vessel they bought from Jews. They could do their magic on the Nile. It wouldn't work. And at that point, it should be so clear to Paro, look, your magicians can't do what Moshe did. And it can't be magic. There's no way this is magic because magic wouldn't work on the water. Moshe did on the water. And already it's 100% clear. You can't blame it on magic at that point. There's no way you could do it. But deep down, Paro had to recognize Hashem based on that there's no other option. But yet, since Paro had his own agenda, he was able on the outside to deny it. And then the Paro thought the entire time, because he wanted to keep the Jews enslaved, and he didn't want to risk having to give up of his own dignity, his own power, and his own arrogance to say that I'm going to let them go, and I'm not a God, I'm not so powerful, and Hashem is the God of the world. Because of that, he could deny truth staring him in the face, which he did 10 times over. A few times he kind of gave in, then he backtracked, but overall, the Makos did not convince Paro until the very end. Hashem hardened his heart sometimes, but ultimately, Paro himself never got to that point, because he had an agenda. He wanted to do what he wanted to do. He wasn't willing to give in based on his own personal agenda. So the answer given to the Chacham asks, he says, "My is chukim mishpatim. What are these statutes and these laws that Hashem has commanded you?" It says, "V'af atza emorlo." You should tell him. You should also tell him. Kilchos haPesach. You tell him the laws of Pesach. You do not eat after the Karban Pesach. So in the times of the Karban Pesach, there was an Isser, you weren't to eat anything afterwards. We do the same thing with Afikomen. The Afikomen we eat is the last thing in the Seder. Afterwards, no more food. You're not supposed to eat after the Afikomen. So the Chacham's answer is very strange on a number of levels. Number one, if you look in the Chumash where this question is posed, a totally different answer is given. Number two, in the answer it says, "Af atem," also tell him. Also, it's a very funny word to use, also tell him. And number three, like, why is this halacha the one mentioned? You tell him even the halacha, don't eat after the Karban Pesach. I mean, it's an interesting halacha, and it's important on Pesach night, but why is that the answer to the Chacham's big question? Why is this answer? So I'll share with you one bigger thought and one smaller thought. The bigger thought, it's said by the Sifsei Chaim, and the Rav Hirsch also mentioned something along this sort. And the thought's the following. Look in the Chumash. The actual answer given to the Chacham is very interesting. Because the Chacham's question, it's very, very complex. He understands that there's categories of mitzvos. There's Eidos, there's Chukim, there's Mishpatim. The Torah's complex, there's a lot to discuss in the Torah. He understands that he's a smart kid, he's a Chacham. So the answer to the Chacham, you would think should be an answer, no, intellectually speaking, to the Chacham. That's what you think it should be. That's what you think the answer should be. But in the Chumash, it's not true. If you look in the Chumash, the answer you give to the Chacham, the way it's explained by Rav Hirsch, it's actually found in Parshas Veschanan. It's only one of the Banim, not in Parshas Bo. He says, the answer of the Chacham given in the Torah. V'marta l'vincha, tell your son, avadamayinu Paro Mitzrayim. We were slaves to Paro Mitzrayim. V'tzeinu Hashem Mitzrayim yad chazaka. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim with a strong hand. So that's pretty simple so far. V'itan Hashem osos emofsim gedolim v'rayim b'mitzrayim v'farachov esu v'neinu. Hashem did these incredible miracles and wonders in Mitzrayim to Paro and his household before our eyes. V'sonsi misham, he took us out of there. V'man havi yosan l'estes l'anu es ha'aretz and his bar l'v in order to give us the land, Eretz Yisrael, they swore to our ancestors. Hashem commanded us to do all of these laws, and the word uses chukim. It doesn't say mishpatim or eidos, it says chukim only. Hashem says do all these chukim. Liras Hashem, okay, the fear Hashem our God. That's good for us all of our days. It gives us life. It's tzedakah for us. It's kindness for us if we were to keep all the mitzvos before Hashem our God as He commanded. So it's a long answer to the Chacham. Very long answer. Fine. So, number one, and just in the pshat, what says here, v'af at emerald, also tell him, what Haggadah means that tell him what the Torah says, and plus tell him this, right? Af, tell him what it says here, and af, and also tell him this one. So you tell him this response, and then you also go ahead and tell him, don't eat after the Karban Pesach. But what is the whole, we put it all together, what does it mean exactly? So the explanation that Rav Hirsch says, I believe, is the following, that the Chacham, he's a wise kid. And he says, I want to understand everything. From A to Z, I'm going to understand the entire Torah. And tell me the Eidos, the Chukim, Mishpat. I know that there's categories and that there's laws and it's complex. And I want to get it all down. So the father says, slow down like your son. Slow down. Not so fast. You're a very smart kid, and you think you get it all. So the father says, you know, you'll work very hard in learning, Ritz Hashem, you'll understand a lot. But you have to know one very important thing. The father says that Hashem talks about Mitzrayim, and therefore Hashem commanded us to do all the chukim. Now, we know a chuk usually represents a law that doesn't have a tam. No reason, we don't understand the reason for it. So the kid asked about chukim eiros mishpatim. Now, mishpatim are ones that are very logical to us. Don't steal, don't murder, etc. Eidos, Rav Hirsch learns to be symbolic mitzvahs, such as, you know, keeping Shabbos is not something that we would come up with on our own, but we understand why. Hashem works 6 days, rested on the seventh, so we rest on the seventh day too. It's Eidos. These are things which are symbolic mitzvahs. Chukim are things that we don't understand so much. Shatnez, Basar V'chalav, Paraduma. No, these we don't really quite get. We wouldn't have ever dreamed of them on our own, but Hashem said so, so we do them. So the father tells the son, my dear Chacham, realize that Hashem commanded us all these chukim, meaning that even those things you think you understand, ultimately it's all Kesh Baruch Hu's ratzon, it's all his command, it's all from Hashem. And you can understand a lot, but you never understand it all. And even those mitzvahs you think are very logical, even those you're not going to get them totally, because the mitzvahs carry within them deep messages that go far beyond anything you can understand. So even though you're a very smart kid, don't think your intellect's going to bring you all the way through. Because Yiddishkeit demands of us to commit ourselves to Hashem, whether we understand it or not. Nasiv and Ishma means we do it, and we'll try to understand as much as we can later on. But we got to do it no matter what. So Hashem commands us to do all these mitzvahs, even though we don't understand them all. So now you'll say, well, if I don't understand it, why should I do it? So the Torah says, well, l'tov lanu kol yom, it's good for us. We believe that Hashem is good. Hashem knows much more than we do. Whatever Hashem says to do, we know it's a good thing for us to do. So I don't understand why. I don't understand why to do it. But I do it because Hashem says it's good for me. I'll fear Hashem. I'll do it out of yira. It'll give me chiyus, l'chayosin, it'll give me life. It'll be tzedaka for me.
So
in the Torah's response, you're telling the Chacham, don't think you get by on your intellect.
For the rest of Pesach,
because Torah is not about intellect. You know, it's an important part of it, but ultimately Torah is about doing Hashem's will, whether you understand it or not. And you have to have emunah. It's good for you. It's good for you. Regardless, it's going to be good for you. Even though you don't understand why it's good for you, I have no clue why not having a cheeseburger is good for me. But Hashem said it's good for you, so I don't need a cheeseburger.
Okay.
A lean cheeseburger. That's the tell the Chacham. Now the problem is when you have that attitude that I'm doing it only because Hashem said so, out of fear, because I have a mood that's good for me, then it becomes very robotic and boring. It's my duty. I'm obedient. I do it. A soldier in the army follows commands. I'm a soldier in the army follows commands. I do my duty. But bottom line, is that an enjoyable lifestyle? Am I really going to feel good with myself? So then we add in, you tell the Chacham, even though you're doing as told, you're doing it out of fear, you're doing it to follow Hashem's will, because Hashem is so great, even so, realize that there's halacha. You cannot eat after Karm Pesach. So the reason given for that halacha in the Gemara and Pesachim, the Rashbam says, is that you should not have the taste leave your mouth. We make sure the taste lingers in our mouth the entire time. So what does that mean? When I say I want the taste to linger, I'm saying that this food was so good, I want it to stick with me. It was so enjoyable, it was so geschmack, I enjoyed it so much, I don't want to lose the taste. That's what it means. And when you tell them halacha, we have halacha after Karm Pesach, you have to make sure not to eat anything else. You want that taste to linger? That's because mitzvahs are enjoyable. If you do your mitzvahs, even though you don't understand them, you're going to realize it gives you so much joy and so much meaning in your life. It's going to be, that taste should stick with you forever. So you're giving the Chacham this message of how beautiful mitzvahs are. So you're trying to basically speak around his intellect. You're saying, don't get by your intellect. Your intellect is going to be an important tool for you to use. And you need it. And when you learn, you're going to do great. But to serve Hashem requires dedication out of yira. But ultimately understand that you'll do those mitzvahs out of obedience, but you will love it. And you're going to enjoy every mitzvah, and you're going to leave with a great taste in your mouth. And you don't want that taste. You want the taste to linger. You don't lose the taste. As you tell the kid. So that's the word for specifically Chaim and Rav Hirsch. Rav Sternbuch adds in an interesting point also. He says that when you say Nati after the Karban Pesach, so what's the message there? The message is that if I want the taste to linger, that means I'm looking towards the future. I want this to stick with me after the Seder. Meaning you might say, well, the Seder is about remembering history. It's a history lesson. This is our history as Jews, the Jewish history lesson. The answer is, well, the point is in the history. The point is that the message of the Seder should take you to the rest of the year after the Seder. So when you say, don't eat after you eat the Karban, don't eat after the Afikomen, make sure the taste lingers in your mouth. Symbolically, it means make sure that the message of the Seder sticks with you into the future. Don't let it be just history. Make sure you take that message and carry it forward. That's the way the Rav Sternbuch understands it. So that's an important message for us, because when the Seder is over, we're tired and we fall asleep, but we have to make sure that any inspiration we found in the Seder sticks with us. We move on with it into the rest of Pesach, the rest of the year. That's a very important thing.
That's a bracha
levatala. Many mafarshim No, ask the question, which is, we have two mitzvos that are very, very connected. There's a mitzvah daily of Zechira Sifas Rayim, mitzvah every single day that we should remember Sifas Rayim, twice daily. We do it through Kriya Shema. There's a mitzvah at the Seder to tell the story. So I mean, maybe Farshim ask, you know, both in the Halacha and the Ashkafa, how those two mitzvahs interact? I mean, why is Pesach night any different, really? I have to mention Mitzvah Mitzvah. Tonight, I have a mitzvah that writes, I must mention Mitzvah Mitzvah. Every single night, I have to do it. So why suddenly at the Seder is it so different? So I do it in a more elaborate way. We know we have our matzah with us, but still, bottom line, I'm remembering the same story I remember every single night. So it's so different. So I saw an idea. I can't remember where I saw it. I saw an idea that, you know, when you remember it every single day, so it's a one brief statement. You know, we fulfill through Kriya Shema, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Zeisis Chaneres Mitzrayim. I am Hashem, your God, took you out of Mitzrayim. We say it every single day. But do I really know what that means? Do I know the story? On Pesach night is when we go through the story at length. We talk about it detail after detail. We relate to its message and to its lessons and to all the nisim which occur. The rest of the year, when you mention it, you're referring back to Pesach. So every day when I say it's his Mitzrayim, my mind should then link me back to my Seder. That's what it should do. Because at my Seder, I got myself involved in the story to its depth. At the Seder, I went through it detail after detail, point after point. I became emotional. I wanted to praise Hashem because of it. So now, 4 weeks later, or 8 weeks later, or 3 months later, it's my daily mitzvah remembering his Mitzrayim. And I say those words, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Zeisis Chaneres Mitzrayim. Those words then should link me back to my Seder, because that's when I knew what that message meant. The marshal I would give is that, you know, as kids, we're all told like certain stories by our parents. Let's say, you know, the boy that cried wolf, right? You know that story in Israel, the boy that cried wolf? You know that story?
Or add on,
yeah. So you heard the story as a kid in its long form, and then the rest of your life, some will say, yeah, it's like the boy that cried wolf. And you know exactly what he means because you heard the story. So you don't have to go through the story again every single time. You use it as a reference point. The boy that cried wolf, oh, I know what that means, right? The boy that cried wolf. So Seder's like that. Every day I mention that Hashem took me out of Mitzrayim. So I don't go through it in its long form.
What he meant is it's not a thing.
But now that you mention it, I know it from the Seder. That's why I know about the story. And then that's able to bring me back to that point and understand what people are talking about, understand the message on a daily basis. So maybe the mashal. You know, these stories that we know as kids, we always refer back to them in short form, and they stick with us. So the Seder is like that. The Seder is the long form, and the daily mitzvah to remember is Mitzrayim is just the short form of the Seder, trying to reference us back to the night of the Seder.
The
Russia, his question is, Ma Avodah Zos Lachem? So again, there's a lot of mafarshim who explain why this question has to be a wicked question. Why is this the Russia's question? So I can go through it all right now, but you know, many, the Haggadah points at one point, Lachem Lolo, that he excludes himself from the Tzibur. He says, what's it to all of you and not to me? So he's excluding himself.
The Rav
Sternbuch here, he takes the word lachem, what's it to you?
Totally,
and he says, what does he mean?
Totally
he means, a Russia is always trying to figure out, what is the personal profit I'm going to gain from this? No, a Russia is somebody who is selfish. All he wants to do, everything is for his own personal gain. So say, ma avodah zos lachem, what's it to you? I mean, like, what are you getting out of it? That's his question. Like, what do you get out of it? Like, forget God, I don't care, he gets out of it. I don't care what it means to connect to my nation. What do you get out of it personally? Do they get any money off of this? Show me the bucks. Like, that's the kind of question he's asking. And that's the question of Russia, because we know that we serve Hashem because it's true, because it's right, because Hashem does so much chesed for us. No, it's our obligation to respond back. It's not because we're doing it because we make money or Hashem will give us more, because we do it because it's the right thing, because it's the truth. It's the emes. But the Russia has to see his own personal gain in everything which he does, or else he's not going to even consider doing such a thing. So that's my avodah hazos lachem. The one of the yesodos of Avodas Hashem is that we act because it's the right thing to do, because Hashem is all powerful and serving Hashem is correct.
That's,
you know, Hashem guarantees reward, but you know the mission tells us that we should not be like Avadim who serve Hashem amaskabel schar. We shouldn't serve Hashem for the reward. The reward will come. That we know. We don't serve Hashem for reward. But the Rashi says, tell me what the reward is. I want to hear why you're doing it. What are you gaining? Give me the numbers. You know, if I don't see the numbers, I'm not doing a thing. That's the Rashi's question.
I could eat rice.
We tell the Rashi a very interesting thing. It says, Ve'af atahaki ashinov. Very strange phrase. It says you should blunt his teeth.
So I
guess the simple shot is that it's a way to kind of put him into place. You know, like he's coming out with a sharp comment. So you blunt his teeth, meaning you have to put him in place. You know, you got to knock his teeth out a little bit. You know, in a metaphoric way. So again, many mefarshim go through the metaphor of white teeth and why blunting his teeth. So interesting point made here by Rav Sternbach is the following. Very often, especially the world we're in, this message to me is so relevant to 2017. Why? Because when you have a question of something that's important, you want to deal with something complex in life. So the answers very often require some thoughts. You know, you have to chew over the answers. You have to be able to process the answers. The answers aren't always so simple. Everyone here wants, you know, we live in a world of Twitter and some sound bites and text, and everything should be within, like, you know, what is it, 120 words or something. Like, everything's got to be a short, sweet answer, or else that's all I can do. Attention spans these days are near to nothing. Actually, read recently, you know, the circus has closed. The Barnum Circus is closed. And one of the things the article mentioned why they're closing, besides the animal rights issues, is that people no longer have attention spans to watch a 3-hour circus. People just, you know, the circus, you have to focus on certain things happening, you know, for a long period of time. And people's attention spans are that they had to shorten the circus because people couldn't stand a 3-hour show anymore. And they had to cut down the acts a little bit because people couldn't watch the acts for so long. And it became, you know, less of an attraction. You know? But we live in a world where everyone wants everything to be short and sweet and in a certain amount of words and done. So, the idea of, when we say, in English, we talk about chewing over something. You know, someone gives you an idea, let me chew over it. I don't understand that, so let me chew over it. We say that in English. And the teeth are what take something which is a big chunk. You know, it's too big for me to swallow, as we say. And they chew it down to size over and over and over again until you can actually process it and swallow it. That's what teeth physically do. And that's the muscle of teeth. You know, the muscle of teeth is that you're given these big ideas of Torah. And sometimes they are too big for us to bite. You know, they're very, very complex ideas. We're talking about things which are beyond our world. And to really understand the truth, you have to take it in slowly, piece by piece, chew it over, think about it, understand it. You can't always get a little easy packaged answer, but you can just hear one time and say, oh, I understand everything now. So in the generation that we're in, especially, that's what we want. You know, everybody wants to have everything, you know, quick and easy. You know, the food goes in the microwave for 2 minutes and it's ready, and I get my text, it's only a certain amount of words, and that's all I can read, and I get my Twitter only sends out a certain amount of the message, and that's all I can say, and finished. But when you're talking about things that are real and important and, you know, foundations of life, sometimes you have to actually take time to think and to chew over longer pieces, to listen to longer shiurim and read longer books and really understand ideas, you know? I tell this very often to the Bachurim in the yeshiva, you know, they'll ask me a question and they want a quick answer. I'll say, you know what, it's a very good question. It's not such a simple question, and let's sit down and talk about it piece by piece. Sometimes you have to go through 18 steps to get to the actual answer. And it's okay because you're dealing with very complex things. If someone were to ask you a question of quantum physics, if you're not already there, you have to bring him in step. It might take you, you know, 8 months to get his answer, because what do you want quantum physics? I don't know anything about quantum physics, but when you get to complex things, it takes a long time to get the answer sometimes. So the Russia's not ready. The Russia doesn't do this. The Russia says, I want a quick and easy answer on the spot right now. If you can't give it to me right now, I'm not doing it. The Chasam Sofer points out in the Russia's question, he says, Mavoda has Zos Lachem. The word Zos Latorah always has an implication. Zos means, whoever says Zos Latorah, Rashi always says that you're pointing at something. Rashi says that Hashem should Moshe the new moon. There it is. Now, Zos Achaya Asher Tochelu, Rashi says that Moshe Rabbeinu held up every animal. You can eat this one and you can't eat that one. He pointed to it. The word Zos, Zekilim Behu, it says that they're able to see the Shekhinah, plant the Shekhinah, as it were. But every single word Zos Latorah means that we can see. So the Chasam Sofer says that the Rashi says, he's at the Seder right now pointing to the Avodah. What are you eating that matzah for? Meaning, I'm not doing it unless you tell me why on the spot, why I should do it. A wise person says, okay, I'll do the mitzvah because Hashem said so, and I'll discuss later the reasons. The Rashi says, I'm not going to do it until you give me the answer right now how to do it. He wants the quick, easy answer on the spot, or else he's not listening to you. So the Hakeh Shino means that he's somebody who doesn't use his teeth properly. Right? He has doesn't chew over information slowly. No, with methodically, in a way, he's going to get to a complex answer. All he does is try to get a quick and easy answer. Also, he says, okay, forget about it. It's not meaningful to me. But we have to recognize that being that the Torah is the emes of Hashem, no, it's a complex work. And sometimes answers of Torah and Hashkafa and Halacha, they take time to get to.
So now is what I want to do.
People think, okay, I can Google an answer and I can read it in two lines and I know it all now. And the answer is no. Those two lines you read, you don't know what they're saying because there's actually an 18-page shuva which is up to those two lines you read. You know? If you read the 18-page shuva, you'd understand a little bit about what the halacha is. But because you only read your two lines on Google, you don't quite get it. And you'll think you get it. That's what we have to realize. Things take time to chew over and understand. That's a message given to the Russian. The Haggadah continues. And it says, well, maybe we should tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So it says, no, we can't do it because the Torah says, it has to be when the matzah and mar are in front of you. So there's two very interesting points being made over here. Number one is that we find you tell the story with the matzah and mar in front of you, which means that the story must connect to mitzvos in action. We Jews, we don't just talk about information, it doesn't bring us to action. We're lomen amanas lasos. We learn in order to do. And if we were to discuss the story and not have it immediately lead us to action, there'd be a deficiency in our learning because it's not leading us to the mitzvah of matzah and marah. It has to be, you tell the story, you do the mitzvah immediately, or else there's a disconnect. And Talmud Torah can never be disconnected from action. It has to immediately move into action. That's the lesson we're giving over to our children and to ourselves. Also, it's just the fanecha, it's before you. And there's actually a girsa al shulchanecha on your table. What does it mean before you? So Rav Sternberg makes a diuk. He says that when you're teaching kids, this is a very important thing, and in ourselves as well. But what's the idea? That the kid has to see that you're doing it yourself. If you're talking about matzah and marah, and the kid doesn't see that you eat matzah and marah, so the message is lost on the kid. Why are you telling me about this mitzvah, about this yisod nemuna, or about this concept if you don't do it yourself? So in the Haggadah, we tell the story, and we make sure that we have before us, right now, on the table, those things that we say we're going to do, because we have to show the kids that we believe in it, we talk about it, and we do it all together. The worst thing in the world of chinuch is when somebody is viewed as like a hypocrite. You know, you teach one thing, you have to practice what you preach. You know, you teach one thing, you do something else. Whether be a parent or Rebbe, you know, we look at that with disdain, and we say this person is not fit to be a role model because they don't practice what they preach. So the Seder, we immediately practice what we preach. We talk about it, and we make sure it's right there on the table. Because the Seder for us is a model of chinuch. This is what the Chazal gave us, the Seder. This is the way you teach. And teaching has to come through action along with the discussion. If not for that, then much is lost upon the child. So that's one of the concepts of having the Matzah Mar Munachin Lefanecha. Vehisha Amda. So, Vehisha Amda. Where is that? Vehisha Amda. So Vehisha Amda. The question always is, what's the Vehi? Right? This has stood for us and for ancestors, for all generations, because not has only one nation risen up to destroy us, rather in every single door people try to destroy us and Hashem saves us. So what's the Vehisha Amda? So again, every parish has his own take on what the Vehi is. Rav Sternbuch says you can understand the Vehi actually is referring to the hatred of the Goyim against us. Meaning that previously we were talking about Yaakov and Esav, and we're about to talk about Lavan and Paro. They were talking about the persecution. The previous pasuk mentioned over here is the Brisbane of Besarim. Said to Avraham Avinu, and he says that you're going to be persecuted 400 years by a foreign nation. And then he said, Vehisha Amda. So he's saying that persecution stands to preserve us. He'd say, what? It seems to be the opposite. The persecution preserves us, persecution destroys us. But it's a very important point here, which is that, you know, we don't ask for persecution. We don't want nisyonos. We're very happy when the goyim are kind to us. But yet, we know that when Klal Yisrael goes through difficult times, number one, it bonds us together. And number two, when the goyim hate us, it forces us to identify as Jews And you know, they're not going to accept us. We have to strengthen ourselves amongst our own people. We've seen it again and again in history. You know, the Jews succeeded, despite all the galus, to remain together as a people. And a lot of it, you know, if you look at historically, then we don't. Again, it's not pleasant. But because the goyim will not accept us, we were forced to care for ourselves and to bond with other Jews and maintain our identity in that way. Unfortunately, if you look at America in the past 100 years, it's the opposite. Because the goyim did accept us, so many, many Jews were lost because of it. You know, people scattered, people assimilated, people intermarried. So Hashem's hashkacha, you know, we can't fully understand. But we see that the sinna, you know, the hatred of the goyim to Klal Yisrael has actually preserved us over the generations. And we don't want it, and we don't ask for it. We much prefer being, you know, in a peaceful time rather than in a time of anti-Semitism. But we have to understand the Shkacha of Hashem has its wonders. And part of the Shkacha of Hashem in Galus is that Hashem is going to be sure we are preserved. And one of those ways is that when the goyim do, you know, come against us, that keeps us as a people together. It's very interesting because you know, Bilam, the goy, the prophet, but the goy, he's the one who said, "Hein am levad od yishkon." You know, they are a nation that dwells alone. They will never be considered amongst the goyim. So different mafarshim explain that the Jew will remain different. So if we, from within, maintain our commitment to Hashem and to Torah, so we'll be different because we will act special and do our own thing, and we'll be proud to be Jews. If chas v'shalom we leave Hashem and try to assimilate, so the goyim will spit us right back out again, and they'll make sure that we're different. Hitler, yamach shemo, did not care if you're religious or not. He didn't care if you had ever kept a Shabbos or studied the word of Torah. If you were Jewish, then you were defined as a Jew, and you went into his camps, and that was it. Because we will be singled out and identified as Jews. You can't hide as a Jew. So we can choose to do it in the easy way, which would be serving Hashem, and to do it in taking the upper road. Or chas v'shalom, it happens sometimes the other way. But the hatred also maintains us as a people. So the lesson in depth from this is just the ways of Hashem to us are mysterious and hidden. And we see these terrible tragedies as tragedies, which they are. But a lot of it also is the Shkacha, which keeps together Klal Yisrael. And sometimes the best of Klal Yisrael comes out in the toughest of times. Now, as I look over here at this parochus dedicated to those three young boys who were killed in Eretz Yisrael, and we all know that when that tragedy occurred, how much achdus came out amongst Klal Yisrael. And you don't know Hashem's hashkacha as to why he has things happen, but you know, you have to look at, you know, the results of tragedy at times bring Jews together and strengthen Klal Yisrael as well. So that's Vehisha Amda. Another interesting point here, a very related point actually. So the Haggadah says, Sei Ulmad, you should go out and learn what Lavan wanted to do to Yaakov. Because Paro only wanted to kill the males, and Lavan wanted to kill everybody. So this line that God is also kind of mysterious, because if you read the Chumash, you don't find anywhere that Lavan wanted to kill anybody. It's just not there. You don't find that Lavan made an attempt to destroy Klal Yisrael. Paro is very clear what he tried to do. But the God blames Lavan for wanting to kill us all. So I'll share with you two interesting ideas about this line in the Haggadah. So one's found in Emes Yaakov, Rav Kamenetsky, in Sefer HaChumash, in Parsha Vayetze. So he says, what exactly is it that Lavan tried to do to destroy us all? So let's read to you the line over here. He says that we find that when Yaakov fled from Lavan's house, so Lavan pursued him. And Lavan came to Yaakov. He said to Yaakov, he said, you should have told me that you're leaving. I would have sent you out with this great party, a sudas preda, with music and dancing, and I would have you'd let me kiss all my children and my daughters, you know, you cruel person. You know, Lavan has all these different complaints to Yaakov. So Lavan, what he wanted to do, he wanted to create a bond between himself and him and his daughters and grandchildren. Yaakov wanted to have a clean cut. And the reason being that Yaakov understood, if Lavan's going to be in any way connected to myself and my children and my grandchildren, that's going to pull us away from serving Hashem. Lavan was a corrupt liar, con artist, deceitful, Ovid Avodah Zarah, and Lavan wanted to somehow inject, you know, his venom into Klal Yisrael. And he wanted to say, yeah, I'm your friend, I'm your partner, I'm your family member, I'm your father-in-law. He wanted to have that connection. But he was very devious. He wasn't sincere. He was doing it because he wanted to be sure that his impact and his influence were made upon his children and grandchildren. Yaakov understood, I have to have a clean cut. Because if Lavan's able in any way to become partners with me, that's going to drag me away from me and my family away from serving Hashem. And he says it in a very powerful way. Because in Eleven says to Yaakov, he says, let's swear together and make a deal based on Elokei Avram and Elohei Nachor. You know, the God of Abraham and the God with lowercase g, the Avodah Zarah of Nachor. Now let's swear both by my God and your God. You know, let's recognize each other, let's be partners, let's get along, let's tolerate each other's religions and each other's beliefs. Yaakov said, we can't do it. I can respect you as a person, but I'm not going to accept or recognize you as a partner with me, you know, in my family and in my faith and what I'm trying to build, because you are a deceptive kind of artist, a liar and a cheat and Elvin Mazara, and I'm trying to begin Klal Yisrael. But if Levin has succeeded in creating this partnership with Yaakov, that itself would destroy Yaakov. So, again, the lesson for us also is that in modern times where the nations around us are friendly to us, so we have to know how to draw our lines. And we have to know that we respect others, we're very grateful that they're kind to us, we want their help and we appreciate them. But the minute we see ourselves that we can really partner with somebody who is Ovid of Azara, who is a con artist, who is deceitful, and they can be, we can recognize they do and everyone can get along with each other in that manner, and that's going to take away from ourselves, because we're now conceding what we believe to somebody else's false beliefs. And that we can never do. And that has a lot of repercussions, certainly in America nowadays, in many, many levels. But we have to realize that it's important that we draw our line, and we should be good, respectful people and appreciate those around us. But never can we say that I'm just like you, you're just like me, and let's all get along. You find like certain rabbis, not in the Orthodox world really, but you know, other forms of rabbis that, you know, they'll partner up with ministers and priests, and you know, I'll go to your church, you come to my shul, we'll have an event there, we'll have an event over here, and it's, you know, forget the halacha for a second, but it's recognizing that, you know, we're willing to respect your beliefs in your gods, and the answer is no, I'm a Jew, I know Hashem Echad, and that's what I believe in. I can be a nice person, and I'm a nice neighbor, and I'm willing to, you know, if we want to partner together for certain causes, that's fine. But to ever say that I can respect your religion or my religion, that for us is a red line we should never cross, because respecting the religion means I'm going to now commit myself to saying that there's other possibilities out there, and that's already the beginning of Avodah Zarah. It's a touchy subject, but it's important for us to know where those lines need to be drawn in a respectful way. So that's Rav Yaakov's pshat. Rav Sternbuch says on this, he says another interesting point. We don't find love in the Torah trying to kill us. And the answer is because he never actually made the attempt. Why not? Because Hashem thwarted those attempts. We know it does say in the Chumash that Lavan says, that he says, your God came to me last night in a dream and told me don't do anything to Yaakov. So Hashem came to Lavan in a dream and said, don't touch Yaakov, which means that Lavan in his mind had a plan to come and kill Yaakov. He had that plan. But Hashem came and stopped him in his tracks in a dream and said, don't you dare touch Yaakov. That's what he told him. So Lavan reveals to us that Hashem stopped his plans. So what's the idea? Many, many times, you know, in history, at this very, very day, there were people out there, and there are people out there, who devise attempts to kill Jews. And Hashem comes and stops those plans. Sometimes we're aware of them, sometimes we're not. You know, frequently in the news, you'll read in Eretz Yisrael, there was a terrorist plot which was being planned, and you know, the army uncovered it, and they came and they stopped the plot. They captured the terrorists, and they destroyed the tunnel, whatever it is. Unfortunately, it happens, sometimes they actually succeed. But you do find sometimes in the papers that it was stopped. And I believe that many, many more times it was stopped, and it wasn't in the papers, because we didn't know how it got stopped. Hashem stopped it in his own way. The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim, it's from Halo. It says, Halo Hashem kol goyim, shabuchu kol umim ki gavar lin chasto. All the nations should praise Hashem, for Hashem's kindness has overpowered us. Now the question always asked is, well, what do you mean? The goyim should praise Hashem because Hashem's kindness was to us? I mean, we should praise Hashem for Hashem's kindness. What do you mean the goyim should praise Hashem because he did kindness to us? So the answer given, the Gemara has an answer which many people take in different ways. But one answer, one explanation to this is that only the Goyim are fully aware of all the kindness done to Klal Yisrael by Hashem. Because we don't know how many times they have planned to do things to us, which Hashem stopped in its tracks before it even took off. So sometimes, unfortunately, they succeed. Sometimes the papers tell us that it got stopped. But more often than not, we're learning over here that Hashem stops it before it even makes it to the papers, before it's even become a story. It gets stopped, you know, this guy got sick, he ran out of money, he got in a car crash. I mean, there could be so many reasons why it didn't work out. You know, he became disturbed and he left his family and decided not to carry out the plot. I mean, all these things. His girlfriend stopped him, you know, like it's over and over again, the plot gets stopped.
My favorite one is when the guys in Gaza accidentally blow themselves up.
Right. Yes. You know, that also happens. And that's this point right over here. So Lavan also, Lavan wanted to come and kill out his family, and Hashem told Lavan, "Don't you dare touch Yaakov." And Hashem's doing that all the time, not through prophecy, but in other ways. He's telling those people out there who want to do something negative to Klal Yisrael, "Don't you dare touch my people," and he stops their plots, you know, in its tracks. Time is okay. So we're almost out of time, and let's do one more piece over here. Let's tell you an interesting mashal given.
Every day.
A mashal given over here. It says that the Haggadah brings down the concept that Klal Yisrael came to Mitzrayim b'mseimat in small numbers. And then it quotes from the Pasuk, we came down to Mitzrayim with Shivim Nefesh, 70 people. And now Hashem has made us, Kehokhe Shemayim, like the stars of the sky, La Rove, in abundance. So the mashal given that work the stars of the sky is difficult mashal. I mean, no matter, if you want to know the scientific number of stars, it's an astounding number. I mean, I meant to Google it before I came in, but I mean, it's like, you know, how many powers, 10 to how many powers is an incredible number. It's like billions and trillions of stars out there in the universe. I don't think every single human being on Earth even comes near the amount of stars that are out there. And Klal Yisrael, certainly not. We are a very small nation. We're Mamikol Amim. So what does it mean we're like stars of the sky? So he brings here a mashal given by the Baal Shem Tov, that we got the comparison wrong. The comparison of stars of the sky is not about the quantity, it's about the quality of every single Jew. Because you stand here on Earth, you look at a star. It's a tiny little dot. But we know that star is so powerful. I mean, we know it's enormous. It's bigger than the sun. Every single star, the sun's a very small star, I think, relatively. The stars out there are enormous. They're far bigger than the sun. And the distance is an incredible distance away. And the light they give is so powerful, even though it looks so small on Earth, we look back and we realize this thing is just incredibly powerful and incredibly big and incredibly hot, and the energy is unbelievable. That's every single Jew. The bracha kofei shemayim is that every single Jew, we look like, you know, we're human beings. You know, we do what we can do. We try our best in life. But the power of a Jew, the ability to shine, the ability to accomplish, the amount of warmth and energy and potential in a Jew is equivalent to the star in the sky. It's a little tiny dot, but the size and the accomplishment that star has is off the charts. So the bracha given to Klal Yisrael is not necessarily the quantity like the stars, but the quality of a star. Every single yid is a star. Every single yid stands alone. Every single yid has the potential to be as great and as powerful as a star in the sky. So there's a lot more to discuss, but I think we'll stop here. So, for Shabbat, Chag Kosher V'Sameach.